And welcome to the Higher Dimension. I'm Phyllis Pryser, your hostess, and we're on bbsradio.com. Our guest tonight is the very lovely Nikki Pickin. And
Plaskett.
She... Huh?
Plaskett.
Plaskett?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. How is that spelled?
P-L-A-S-K-E-T-T.
Okay, Plaskett. I'm sorry. I couldn't read your writing. Anyway... I invited Nikki because she is a very wonderful person in her own right, but she's also a wonderful yoga instructor. I've been going to her, coming on a year now, I think, and she is wonderful. She teaches in a number of different places in Washington, D.C., which is where we're coming from to you live tonight. And I've been taking lessons from her or a class from her. And I'm going to let her tell you about herself and her background, because we've had a few wires crossed and our emails are not talking to each other for some reason. At any rate, Nikki, please go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself, what got you interested in yoga, and how it came about that you're now a wonderful teacher.
How did I become interested in yoga? That's a great question. My background is in dance. And I took my first yoga class as a child when one of my parents forgot to pick me up from dance class. I had a friend, her mother was a yoga teacher, and anyone that stayed late would have to sit in and take the yoga class. That was my first exposure. I was probably about 10 or 9 years old.
And where was this? In what country?
This is... Where I'm from, I'm originally from St. Croix, Virgin Islands.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Oh, how wonderful. I know you recently went back to visit. So you got interested from that one lesson?
From that one lesson. It was something that seemed so natural to me.
Uh-huh.
Just breathing. The class was a Hatha yoga class, which I do teach Hatha yoga. It was in the Shivananda tradition.
Uh-huh.
And I just enjoyed it, sitting, meditating, and of course I was 10 years old, so the postures came very easily, but it was different than dance.
Right.
And I remember feeling a bubbling feeling during my meditation, a light, airy bubbliness.
Was that the first time you had meditated?
I don't think so. I had meditated before, but just didn't know there was a name to it because I'm a child and no one else around me was meditating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I went to church every Sunday and we prayed and prepared for prayer.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe I did meditate. Just as a natural thing, and I think many children and many people do meditate naturally, but just don't identify it as such.
I think that's what they're doing. And that's wonderful. So you became a dancer first, or did you go into dancing now, or how did your life evolve and you come here?
Well, I came to D.C., I came to college, but I studied dance throughout up until my early 20s. And what really deepened my yoga practice as a consistent practice was I went on a ski trip and I injured my knee.
Uh-huh.
And I decided not to take the option of surgery and do physical therapy and heal on my own.
Uh-huh.
And yoga was my healing modality.
And how did you heal yourself with yoga? What did you say you do Hatha yoga, and are there other kinds that you are familiar with?
Yes, there's Raja yoga, which is royal yoga, Bhakti yoga, which is a yoga of devotion.
Uh-huh.
Hatha yoga is an aspect of Raja yoga. There's Karma yoga, which is yoga of service. There's so many different forms of yoga that meet an individual's personal needs, no matter what their stage is in life.
Now, I'd only been aware that there was Hatha yoga and maybe another kind of yoga. I was not aware there are multiplicity of yoga practices. Can you explain what they are and what they do?
The major differences between the varying practices of yoga is in Hatha yoga, we are very focused on the physicalness of the practice, moving the body.
Okay.
Moving the body through postures and exercises.
Mm-hmm.
With devotional yoga, your posture, your movement of the body are acts of devotion, acts of ritual. With karma yoga, your movement of the body are acts of service. whether it be volunteerism or whatever your career is, if you're a healer.
Oh, really?
So, yes. So they're not centered so much on the physical postures as Hatha Yoga is. But Hatha Yoga is very popular in this country and in Western culture just because of our mindset. It's something that we identify with.
Uh-huh.
A lot of the other aspects of yoga tend to be looked at as very culture-specific in terms of Hinduism
uh-huh.
or Brahmanism,
uh-huh.
and they are tied to quote-unquote religions in those cultures.
Uh-huh. But anyone can basically learn them, and
yes.
Is that true?
Yes, anyone can practice yoga because it is not a religion, it's a spirituality, it's a technique, it's a tool
uh-huh.
to achieve a state of oneness,
uh-huh.
a tool to prepare the body for meditation. And as I mentioned, when we talk about yoga in this country, people really think of more of the exercise aspect. But there's a whole philosophical background to the practice of Hatha Yoga. There are the yamas and the niyamas. Yamas, Y-A-M-A-S.
Uh-huh.
Niyamas, N-I-Y-A-M-A-S.
Uh-huh.
And the yamas and the niyamas can be likened to the Ten Commandments. How you treat yourself inwardly and how you treat others.
Uh-huh.
And then in addition to the yamas and the niyamas, you have the physical practice, which is the asana.
Uh-huh.
Then you have diet, which uh-huh. corresponds to the yamas and the niyamas. Most yogis are vegetarians because
okay.
one of the yamas is to be non-harming, and to eat flesh you have to harm, you have to take a life.
Okay.
And in terms of the diet, you choose to eat the purest foods to keep the body lean and limber and
okay.
to keep the mind clear and sharp, and that's most suitable for the practice of yoga, for the physical postures. Then
uh-huh.
there's pranayama, which is breathing exercises.
Now that I'm familiar with, the pranayama. Again.
Yes. And then there's meditation.
And meditation.
Yes.
And that is very important. I think that's becoming much more prevalent. We've been doing that for, I guess, the last 20-some years here in the U.S., as far as I know. And they even do it at the Pentagon, have a meditation room at the Pentagon, you know.
Mm-hmm. as well as in many international airports.
Ah, really?
Yes, there's in the Amsterdam airport, there's an entire area of the airport that is reserved for meditation and relaxation.
Really?
They have the most comfortable lounge chairs and meditation rooms as well.
Well, at airports, I guess you really could use it, couldn't you?
Uh-huh, yes.
Travel is not an easy thing.
And it's been proven that spending some time meditating strengthens the immune system, so it's very beneficial for the traveler because you're spending hours trapped in a plane with recycled air, with
yes.
people and all of their energies, whether it be positive or negative.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get out of that environment, you need to strengthen yourself to prevent.
Well, that's why I think also that
yeah.
they have some of the massage therapy or chair massage therapy in airports now, too. I
yes.
know that's getting popular with visitors and travelers. Tell me a little bit of, again, how you evolved. I know I took ballet when
yeah.
I was a child, and it was, I loved it, and I didn't realize until I was in about 28 years old when I wanted to get back into doing something. Somebody suggested I start doing yoga,
yeah.
so I said I would, and there was a very popular book at the time. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's called the Richard Hittleman, Hittleman, a yoga book, and I got it, and I started looking at the pictures, and all of a sudden it dawned on me that I had done yoga in ballet.
Yes.
Those were the warm-up exercises
right. yes.
that we used, and we weren't told that when we were growing up and took ballet, but they were, and I had a Russian ballet teacher, but I was really stunned to know I actually knew what it was, so it was easy for me to get my body back into going with those exercises. It's like the body has a memory, does it not?
Yes, muscles have memory. Although the body regenerates every 7 years,
mm-hmm.
they still leave an etheric trace behind, and the memory
mm-hmm.
that is in place, it affects how the body responds to movement. So So if you were athletic as a child and you may have taken leave from athletic endeavors as an adult and you return to it in your later years, you'll have an easier time adjusting to the changes in the body as opposed to a person that has never tried any type of athletics in their life. But the same applies to someone that studies music.
Oh, yes, yes, that's true.
So it's not just the muscle, the musculature within the arms and the legs, but it's also the muscle of the brain.
So the body
knows how to make the connections to make the body move in a certain way. The brain knows how to make the connections to make the body move in a certain way.
I was just going to say, it sounds like the brain functions as an archive, actually.
Absolutely. The primal brain is the youngest part of the brain. The neocortex is what develops in adulthood. That's the part of the brain that we fill with all of our stuff that we use to identify ourselves. Movement is established in the primal brain. Very early on in the fetal development, the vestibular system is developed while the baby is in the mother's womb. So if you were fortunate enough to have a mother that was very active, when you're born, you're ahead of the curve. You have a greater sense of balance, and it's easier for you to coordinate your musculature to do anything. And that affects your brain development as well as your emotional development, because then you start to foster confidence in your body's ability.
And now, let me catch that again. Did you say that if a mother exercises while she's carrying the child, that child's brain also has the benefit of the memory of movement etched into its own brain, so that it is beneficial to the child as it grows? Then it will have that core memory of movement and exercise, and it'll be easier?
Absolutely.
Wow, now that's something I never heard of.
And you may ask why I know that. Trace back to my background a little bit. I also specialize in prenatal yoga. So I have certification as a vinyasa hatha yoga instructor, and then I have a specialization as a pregnancy yoga instructor, and I'm also working on towards the certification as a childbirth educator. And I recently gave birth.
Yeah, I know you gave birth.
All of this is very fresh in my mind, and I really teach from personal experience. I don't read something out of a book and then try to share with anyone. I like to experience it myself and internalize it.
Well, you know, I have to admit that I'm afraid. I can't say I'm afraid. I must admit I am of that school myself. If I can do it, if it works for me, then I in turn can say to others, here, I've walked this path. You can also walk it.
Right.
If I can do it, you can do it. If it's good for me, it'll be good for you. So, so I understand what you're saying, and it's sort of not do as I say, but do as I do. But I wish I had known that when I was carrying my children. I think it would have made my pregnancies a lot easier.
Yeah, there have been leaps and bounds. The approach to women, the fact that women should be sedentary and you should treat pregnancy as an illness, we have come a long way from that, and it's very, movement is encouraged. Women are encouraged to exercise. And as a matter of fact, this was changed because women took control. Researchers said, you know what, we're going to study ourselves. And they studied themselves. They will go into the lab when they're pregnant and exercise and check out the changes and compare the results of their birth and their pregnancy to women that were sedentary.
I hadn't known that. It's interesting because when I first gave birth, and that was quite some time ago, it was sort of, you know, you shouldn't do things, you know, you don't want to upset the baby. And they sort of kind of said you should be more or less sedentary, you know?
Babies love mama's movement.
Well, when
I also hold a certification as a perinatal fitness trainer.
Oh, that's so wonderful. Boy, I wish I had somebody like that when I was carrying. I know when I was carrying, the difference between my first two children and my last was my husband at the time was in the last time I carried, was in a band, and I would go and listen to the practices, and the baby would start kicking in time with the music, which was okay for slow music, but when they got to the really fast parts, I was being kicked to death, I thought.
You know,
she was rather enthusiastic in her response to the music she was listening to in the womb. And he did country western music, so you know it can get pretty fast. But so I knew the children, you know, could hear you and all, but I had no idea that movement was to be, and it makes sense, sort of, because before we had modern science, women were active while they were pregnant.
Absolutely.
They did so much work, they couldn't stop, because the whole household would end. I mean, it would just paralyze industry in the home as they knew it.
In the community.
In their community as well, so they had to continue working and keeping up and moving, and well, I think we learn, as you say, we learn as we go along.
Yeah.
But at any rate, I think that's wonderful. What can people do to help get themselves? Where can they go to get some information on things like this?
Well, a great source is the Internet.
Okay.
Yoga is such a popular thing these days. All you have to do is type in yoga, and you will come up with 5,500 sites that have different information, different styles, different videos, books, yoga props, yoga clothes. It is a multi-million dollar industry right now. But I would always suggest that someone finds a class and shop around and find a class that you feel comfortable with.
Good.
Find a class that suits your needs, because there's a class for everyone out there.
Mm-hmm.
From something that's very gentle to something that's very physical, something that's focused on breath, something that's focused on structure, or something that's focused on the meditative aspect. And within the Hatha Yoga tradition, there are many different styles as well. The style I teach is Vinyasa Yoga, but I also study Kundalini Yoga.
Okay, and can you tell us some of the differences of these different yogas that you're discussing? Because I'm sure many people are like me, their knowledge is somewhat limited.
Vinyasa yoga is, vinyasa translates as flow. Each
as
of
flow?
The movements, flow, F-L-O-W.
Right, okay.
Each of the movements are linked together. So there isn't, it's not a static standing series of standing movements. You link the movement with the breath, the movement of the body. So you may come from a cobra pose and flow back into a child's pose. And then from a child's pose, flow back into a cobra pose. So
that
cobra
sounds
pose.
A little bit like ballet.
Yes.
In a sense.
Correct. It's like a dance.
Yes. Okay.
It's like a dance. Kundalini yoga is a Kriya yoga. You have specific sets that you have to follow. And each set, Kriya translates as exercise. A set consists of a breathing exercise, a asana, which is a posture, and a meditation, oftentimes coupled with a mantra. So you have to coordinate four activities into one exercise. And it sounds more difficult than it is.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the kriyas are as simple as sitting with the legs crossed, touching the thumb and the index finger, and breathing deeply.
Okay.
And some are more complex. I just wanted to backtrack a little bit. We were talking about pregnancy and the perinatal.
Yes, go ahead.
I brought that up not just to discuss what my background is, but to discuss the fact that everyone has practiced yoga. During your perinatal period, during your time in the womb when you're developing, you go through every yoga posture known to man while
what?
In your mother's belly. Yeah.
Really?
Yes. So that's another reason why the movements were so familiar to you. You were able to access that intuitive self. That's why it's so familiar.
Oh.
And then as a child, you practice yoga constantly. As a child, you practice, when you're an infant, you practice the correct breathing, deep abdominal breathing. If you look at baby breathe, every time they inhale, their belly expands.
Yes.
And every time they exhale, their belly contracts.
Yes, I have noticed that. Yes, I was very aware of that.
So it's a wisdom that lays within us. It's just for us to get beyond all the excess chatter in the brain and reconnect to that wisdom and use it as a tool of healing, a tool of expanding ourselves beyond the I, expanding ourselves into the oneness of things, and meditating and just being still, being calm.
Well, I'm very much one for meditating. I've done it, practiced it for years. I think it's what kept me sane through a whole bunch of my life, a whole bunch of things that I just would rather not to go through if I had to again. But yes, I think meditation, and it has been my experience, meditation is one of the best gifts you can give yourself, and I call it a gift, because that's when we're acknowledging our own bodies and respecting ourselves.
Yes.
And that's so important. And most people forget to honor themselves and their bodies and their minds because they get so caught up in our everyday world. Mm-hmm. And especially women. I'm not knocking men now, mind you. There are many good, wonderful, you know, busy, loving men. But at this point, I find that most women become so active and taking care of the family and the home and very often working outside the home, that quite frankly, they have a tendency to put slack, which is not the where they should be.
Yes.
It's very, very bad for women to be last, because then you deplete your own energies. And if I'm not mistaken, I know I'm taking this yoga for myself since I'm older. Now, I'm taking it to get my body back in shape, to help me feel good about myself, to help regenerate and rejuvenate my body. And a lot of older women now, if I'm not mistaken, are doing that very thing, are they not? They're becoming more interested in doing that for the body in a respectful way to help them with aches and pains and to get their body where they can actually move without pain again. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. A lot of people are overwhelmed by the notion of meditation. They feel like they have to sit in a pretzel position, which
right.
is one of the most famous yoga postures, lotus pose.
Right.
You have to be a certain type of calm, non-reactionary individual, and you have to sit there, be able to sit there for 30 minutes to 2 hours a day. Meditation mm-hmm. is really not that complex. You can work segments of meditation into your life and still reap the benefits of the relaxation that it fosters, the
exactly.
relaxation that it brings to the body. If you only have 5 minutes, take that 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to sit on the floor. You can sit in a chair. You can do a walking meditation. You
mm-hmm.
can do some simple breathing exercises to clear the mind
mm-hmm.
and then go on with your day. Kundalini yoga is often called the yoga of householders. It is easier to incorporate into the life of a householder. They have a tradition of rising every morning for satna. Satna is your daily practice
mm-hmm.
with the sunrise. And you do a little chanting, meditating,
mm-hmm.
you do a few postures. You try to do the same meditation for 40 days.
Oh,
so
really?
You can really internalize the effects of that full meditation.
40
and
days.
And then you go on with your day.
Hmm. Okay. Why 40 days? Now, at least in the Christian religion, there's a connection with the 40 days.
Similar
which, you know.
Connection.
Pardon?
Similar connection. 40. The number 40 is the amount of time it takes to change the connections in the brain to change and break habits.
Really?
That's why you say you should perform them consistently for 40 days. If you take a break, you start over. So if you miss one day, you start over counting at one.
Uh-huh.
40 days consistently. Same time, same space, exact meditation.
See, I had not heard that, but as I said, the number 40 is significant.
In many traditions.
In many traditions.
Not only in the Christian
right.
tradition, yes.
What are some of the other things you can say? You're talking about for women. Would you like to talk a little bit more about the pregnancy issue, since that seems to be dear to your heart and it's what you used? And I can say she came from having a child, coming back looking just as fit as a fiddle. you just swung right back into the routine, and you did such a fabulous job.
Yes. Well, I was fortunate to have a low-risk pregnancy, so I was able to have a natural childbirth. And that had a lot to do with my quick recovery. Also, the fact that I'm a yoga instructor. I taught up until I was 7.5 months.
Right.
And I taught about 6 classes a week. That, in addition to my personal practice, and I walked a lot. I walked frequently.
Mm-hmm.
But the greatest experience for me was during my actual delivery, having a meditative practice, I was able to recover from the contractions very quickly.
Yes.
Any woman that has experienced a contraction, she knows that it's a feeling that doesn't compare to any other feeling in life.
You bet.
But it's temporary.
Right.
So you have you know, it's like getting shocked
uh-huh.
by being prodded.
Yes.
And then someone takes the prodding iron away, and it's like, ooh, what a relief. And then they hit you with it again. But in that time that you have the relief, you don't think about the next contraction. You
That's
just
true.
Think about being relaxed, and that helps the body to open up. And you just go with the flow. Also, my yoga practice allowed me to sit comfortably in a squat position so I could deliver my baby and use gravity to assist. That had a lot to do with it. It helped me to ease through the discomforts early on in my labor. I would just do a few stretches and rock the body in a rhythmic movement. And I wasn't afraid to feel. I wasn't afraid to experience something new. Because with your meditation, the deeper you get into your meditative practice, each time you're going to feel something a little different.
Right. That's true.
You shouldn't be afraid of it. Just become an observer of what's happening in the body.
Mm-hmm.
Even something as simple as your leg falling asleep.
Mm-hmm.
Try not to move. Just
mm-hmm.
observe that feeling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Those simple observations of the body helps you to break through and bust through fears that may accumulate in your life.
Yeah, there are many fears that we have in our life, I'm sorry to say. And we sort of gather them like, I liken to some of life's experiences like a peddler with a pack on his back,
yeah.
going around just picking up old bits of flotsam and jetsam, things you really don't need.
Mm-hmm.
You think maybe one day you will, but a lot of it is just old stuff that you really don't need. And when you unpack it and look at it, you realize what you're carrying in worries, and I'm talking they tend to be worries,
yeah.
fears, distress, anxiety, real and imagined, and most anxieties, quite frankly, are imagined, not real. And they take a terrible toll, and we're highly imaginative beings, and so our mind creates some really wonderful stuff, not to say that there aren't reality, you know, there are not really some things that one should be concerned about, but by the time we get to adulthood, very often there's so much that we have that we really should unload, because
mm-hmm.
it keeps us from being happy.
Yes, and that fear builds tension in the body.
Yes.
That tension is stored in your muscles. That's one of the great benefits of Hatha Yoga.
Yes.
You bring that tension that's stored deep in the body from the fears and anxieties of
mm-hmm.
life. You bring it up to the surface.
Right.
And then you release it through the physical movements of the body. And then you prepare for meditation.
Right.
So the meditation is to bring up the tension in the mind, and then you release that. And when you've released all the tension, then you're ready for the best part, relaxation.
Right.
And the relaxation is when the real healing takes place. You
mm-hmm.
start to feel sensations of a melting down. You feel the body sinking into the floor if you're
mm-hmm.
sitting, or sinking into the floor as you lay back.
Right. Yeah.
And certain chemical changes start to take place in the body. The body starts to emit that love hormone,
mm-hmm.
oxytocin, and the effects of the stress hormone is decreased. That's
mm-hmm.
when the healing starts to take place. You start breathing slowly. You start to just let go of things, and then you stop thinking
mm-hmm.
just by listening to the sound of your breath. And
mm-hmm.
it's important listening to the breath, because listening to the breath reminds us of the contract that we made with the Creator when we came here.
Right.
You know, you can't, everyone came here to do something, and
exactly.
the most common thing that we all came to do was breathe.
Well,
it's
kind of hard to continue life, I've noticed.
Exactly. When you stop breathing, you're not doing what you came here to do. So that's reconnecting with that oneness. We all breathe. We're all breathing the same air.
Uh-huh.
Internalizing that connection.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that everyone does. You know, have you ever gone into a room preparing for a discussion, and you guys may take a break, and you tell everyone, let's take a deep breath, and the whole room takes a deep breath in
mm-hmm.
unison. And
what
just,
a difference.
Yes. What a difference in the energy in the
yes.
room. Everybody
yes.
gets honed in. If you ever have to work on a group project with
yes.
someone, just everyone in the group take a deep breath together and release the breath, and you will be surprised by how symbiotic your movement becomes. If you're working on something that's creative, ideas will start to flow. A brainstorm session will take place, and
mm-hmm.
you'll just be recharged.
Right.
And that happens because when you start to breathe slowly and pay attention to the breath, less oxygen is consumed and less carbon dioxide is eliminated.
Right.
That means the tension in the muscles is reduced and there's a decrease of activity in the nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
And that will help you sleep better.
Mm-hmm.
And sleeping is also a time of healing.
Well, I find, frankly, that since I started doing yoga and religiously, I should say, but perhaps not that way. But since I started doing yoga on a regular basis, even when I'm not just taking classes with you, I have found that I'm happier.
Yes.
There's an increase in happiness, which kind of surprised me because I didn't equate doing exercise with happiness,
yeah.
To be honest with you. I'm kind of like the sedentary person, you know.
Mm-hmm.
At least I have been known to be so. And then something just told me inside, it's time to move on, Phyllis, and get yourself into shape.
Yes.
And but I find also I'm sleeping better.
Mm-hmm.
I find that I have fewer little reminders of my age, shall we say, in movement.
Mm-hmm.
I find myself a lot more flexible. I have a lot more energy. I can keep up with many people that I did not used to be able to do. I feel like I'm about 20 years younger, to be honest with you. I can't find any negatives in doing this practice.
That's great. I mean, you've shared some of your practice with me, and I know the breathing exercises have a lot to do with it because your state of mind is reflected in the way you breathe.
Right.
And by practicing the breathing exercise, you can control the mind by controlling your breath.
Right.
So, like I said before, you're regulating your intake of oxygen. And
mm-hmm.
oxygen is one of the great nutrients of the air we breathe in. You know, it oxygenates the blood. The oxygenated blood goes to the muscles,
mm-hmm.
and it feeds the muscles the nutrients they need
mm-hmm.
to thrive. And then it takes away all the negative. It takes away the waste. And
mm-hmm.
if you keep breathing and perspiring, you eliminate that waste from the body. So then your system isn't clogged up with a bunch of blockages. It brings the body into balance. And that's what mm-hmm. the practice of yoga is. Hatha means sun and moon. Yoga means to yoke. You're yoking mm-hmm. the mind, the body, and the spirit. So it can be a chariot. It can be a vehicle that will allow your spirit to soar.
The other thing is, yes, and you're right about the breathing. You see, I studied opera and the classical violin when I was younger, so I breathed properly for many years simply because one of the first things you learn when you start singing professionally or even learning classical music is how to breathe the way the child does, you know,
yeah.
in and out. And so that's something that I did for years. And then when I got away from that and stopped being so much oriented into the music field, I came up with stresses in life and everything else. And what that does, and stress does this, and I catch myself even now, when something upsets me, I catch myself breathing very shallowly. And so I try to remind myself at those points to take a deep breath and immediately restore the calm within.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we keep control of ourselves, quite frankly, is by keeping control of our breath. The more stressed we are, the more shallow we breathe until we're just about darn it panting.
Right.
And so I've learned a great deal from you and also about my own body, because the more I get into this, the more I am aware of my body and how it feels, and I can move to take a rest when I need to, when before I might have just pushed on through,
mm-hmm.
I've begun to become more aware and listen to the body when it says, take a breather now, Phyllis. It's a good thing, and I do, and then I find that my energy comes back very quickly. I'm not as stressed. I can accomplish more and do more and become more efficient with the use of my body and the time I have. I don't find anything really negative about all of this. And the thing is, ladies and gentlemen, once you get over the first pain. And there is some pain when you first start using your muscles. But the thing is, you don't abuse your muscles. You just work them. And that is that once you get through that, you start, if you don't do it, you miss it. Your body starts saying, hey, you missed a day. Where is it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's the other thing that my body now demands that I provide it, the exercise. Or it's hard to explain, isn't it? The way the body reacts when you don't exercise it when it's gotten used to being exercised.
You miss it more because the body, it's like growing up in the country and coming to live in the city.
Uh-huh.
Exercising the body expands the body. It pumps blood into the muscles. Everything mm-hmm. is plump and fresh and open, and the breath and the energy moves freely. Mm-hmm. When you stop exercising, stop moving the muscles, things shrink, they contract, the body begins to atrophy, and that becomes binding, and you become more aware of the body's limitations. But as
Correct.
Much as the body has its limitations, the spirit offers liberation from those limitations, and you
yes.
can get liberations from the limitations, that's a tongue twister, from
yes.
the limitations of the body through your breath.
Right.
I oftentimes share with you and other students, when you're in a posture and you may feel a little tightness and a little discomfort,
right.
practice your deep breathing. You are amazed at how the body begins to blossom and open up, and what felt tight before begins to soften and
yes.
become more supple. Because you've released the fear of feeling that tightness.
Exactly.
It's as though you're trying something new and your body goes through a mini fight or flight response. Oh, my gosh, I got to stop this because I don't know what this is.
Mm-hmm.
And you just take a deep breath and you let go of that tension and you let go of that intensity.
Mm.
And the body opens and you can do more than you ever thought you could do before. And you do this every day,
mm-hmm.
every day, every day. And you can do more and more and more. And it's a wonderful feeling. It's great to do something for yourself. This isn't for anyone else. This is
mm-hmm.
for yourself. But in reality, in the true meaning of things, it is for everyone else. Because if you practice your yoga and you practice your meditation, you
mm-hmm.
come into that oneness of being. You are easy to get along, and you're doing your part. You're fulfilling your
mm-hmm.
obligations and your contract as a human. If you're practicing yoga, you are taking care of the environment as well as you taking care of yourself, because you see the earth as an extension of yourself.
Yes, there is a great deal of spiritual growth that comes with yoga, and many people tend to still think of it as sort of, I don't want to say woo-woo, but because there's still some of that old attitude hanging around.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you do change when you start working with spirit. Your emotions begin to change. Your body changes. When you start working with your body, your mind begins to change and your spirit changes. And that spirit, which is really you, begins to come forth.
Yes. And I mean, this technology is ancient.
Yes.
It originated in Africa, and it traveled to India, and it came of age in India, and a lot of the experiences were documented.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to go through blindly practicing yoga.
No.
The Yoga Sutras that were written by Patanjali many,
mm-hmm.
many years ago. And this book tells you about the necessary practices, the obstacles that you may meet during your practice, how to remove them,
sure.
precise descriptions of what you may feel and what can be obtained by these practices. It's really great. I'm going to share a quote with you, and I'll read the translation.
Okay.
It's talking about how your practice of yoga should be. And it says, the effort towards steadiness of mind is the practice. So it's not about getting your foot behind your ear.
Right.
It's about
even if I could.
Yeah. It's about that steadiness of mind. You have to be watchful. And you have to, you know, be careful of your actions and of your thoughts. Not
that's
just
it.
During your yoga practice, but during your life. Because if you do something that's foul in your life, it's going to enter your yoga practice.
Right.
If you didn't do something that you were supposed to do earlier in the day, it's going to enter your yoga practice. If you're suffering with issues of integrity, it's going to enter your yoga practice. They call it the monkey mind, when you're sitting there quietly and you think you've reached the state of meditation, the monkey mind starts dancing and it says, oh, you didn't do this and you should have done this, and is he looking at my butt, and you just you get out of yourself. But one of the things that are very important is to have a continuous practice, a practice that's firmly grounded and attended to for a long time. And no matter how long, you know, your practice changes with your life. I had a big change in my practice, and I'm a mother now.
Yes, and that is.
You still want to have that quality. No matter what it is you're doing,
right?
You want to achieve it earnestly.
Yes.
You know, according to yoga, it says that if Yogi Bhajan says this quote, he is the man that brought Kundalini Yoga to the West.
Ah, okay.
And he says that if you cannot see God in all, you cannot see God at all. I really like that quote.
I agree. And finding God in everyone and in all there is can be a challenge upon occasion.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It can. It definitely can be. But, you know, and the yogis believe that they don't just say God created anything. They say God, he's just a pure consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
He's pure consciousness. You can dissolve and evolve right into that pure consciousness.
Yes. And I understand what they're saying.
Yes.
And it's beautiful, and I happen to agree.
Yes, and it said that any little disturbance in that consciousness creates motion. And that motion is how the entire universe appeared. And you can see that in your daily life through your meditative practice.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a little break in your consciousness,
mm-hmm.
then your leg starts to get numb.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing you know, you need to get up and you've started a whole new phase, a whole new existence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're in this concrete world right now, and we kind of have to work backwards because we're so into the space that we're in and how we live in the space and how we move in the space.
Mm-hmm.
We have to work from, okay, I know where I am,
mm-hmm.
and I know how I move in this place.
Mm-hmm.
So now I need to see how my mind responds to me moving in this space. And now I need to watch myself and just be an observer of my mind as it moves in this space. And now I need to figure out why my mind moves this way in this space. And then you don't care about the space anymore.
It's a process of learning, as far as I can understand it.
Yeah.
It's a learning of who you are, really. And I learned more about me in what I'm doing now than I ever did before. And I find that I'm growing and expanding in ways that I could only dream about before.
And that growth, it takes place in this realm, in this earth as we
mm-hmm.
know it. And nature plays a big aspect in the practice of yoga traditionally.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to share a quote I like to share with my mother is about the cycle of life. This quote is by Shola Arewa. She's based in England. She has a great book called Opening to Spirit.
Okay.
And this book deals with yoga and the chakras, but it also delves into some aspects of spirituality, specifically African spirituality, and she used concepts of African spirituality, and she shows
uh-huh.
the connection between them and the practice of yoga.
Okay.
In her quote, in her book, she says, pure spirit is woven into a physical body in the womb of the mother. On the first part of our journey, the soul travels from the spirit ether through to thought air, conception fire, gestation water, and finally birth, earth. So
mm-hmm.
she's talking about how the body, to come into this realization, we
mm-hmm.
assume all of the elementals before we're manifested into this carbon being.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's...
That sounds beautiful.
It sounds beautiful, but it's so true, because we have to truly embody ourselves to live this experience here on earth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to be physically fit, physically able to move.
Well,
and
yes.
Traditionally many rituals and ceremonies involving movement, adorning the body, preparing food for the body,
mm-hmm.
have been ways of honoring the spirit and celebrating rites of passage. And to me, that's what a yoga practice is. It's an opportunity to honor the spirit through your body, through the chariot, your vehicle. In Christianity, they say the body is your temple.
Absolutely.
And we stray away from that. We don't treat it as such. We fill ourselves with garbage, junk foods, garbage television.
Well, I was just going to say, I think the garbage of thoughts is more harmful. Negative feelings, anger, jealousy, unkindness, selfishness.
Yes.
These two are the garbage that we, and I can't exclude myself, I'm a human being, that we fill in our bodies. And, you know, it affects our bodies.
It does.
Because it brings us pain. It's not just the physical food. It's the mental food we feed our bodies and the spiritual food we feed our bodies.
Yes.
Denial is a very bitter pill.
It is. And the beauty of having a new yoga practice where you are consumed by the physicality of the postures,
mm-hmm.
it gives you an opportunity to practice non-attachment, which is
one of the
yamas of yoga. And because you get so focused and you get to hone the mind on moving the body and breathing correctly, that what you had to do before and what you have to do after class is no longer of any relevance. You're present in the here and now. And when you're done with the class, you come into full relaxation. And many times, you may have had a question. You might not have understood something. And
right.
After you've completed the relaxation, you've totally let it go. You can't even recall what it
yes.
was that was on your mind, that burning question in the beginning of class.
Right. That's true. There are times when I want to ask you something, and by the time we're done, I haven't a clue what it was.
That's the true practice of yoga, letting go. Non-attachment. Yeah, I mean, I've taught in several different environments, and
mm-hmm.
oftentimes teaching, when you teach in a health club or
mm-hmm.
a gym, that type of facility, people come in looking for an exercise class.
Right.
And that's not what you get. You can get that, you know.
Oh, yes, obviously.
You know, some classes I have are structured to be more demanding than others, but that's not what you leave with.
Mm-hmm.
You leave with something a little more that you won't pick up in an ice class. And that's important. That's the little nuance of the practice of yoga, which differentiates it from a stretching class. Yeah, where you're just there to gain flexibility. But you gain strength. You gain confidence because you have actually spent an hour deliberately breathing, consciously staying connected to your breath. And for many people, it is a far-fetched theory to just sit and breathe.
Well, I do know that, as it has happened, that, you know, I can almost go out of my body just doing breath
yes.
work. Just go into a state of trance.
Yes.
Just by breathing. And, you know, I have to watch myself sometimes because that's not where I really want to be at times. There's time and a place for everything.
Correct.
But part of this is also, I'm trying to hone in on something. Part of this is a way of life. It's a life-altering experience that we are looking for here. And creating a greater spirituality among people, because we are moving into a new spiritually aware stage, and nobody really wants to be left behind. But part of the spiritual growth is, in order to change, you've got to want to change, and change from within. You can't stay where you are. Anything you do in life, like yoga or breath work or service to others, you're not going to stay where you are. You're going to grow. And just staying in a status quo isn't living. It's an existence.
Mm-hmm.
And many people seem to think that existing is all they need to do. I have to disagree with that. We aren't here to exist. We're here to learn, to love, to grow, to experience, and to enjoy life to its fullest. And part of that is by respecting the body and respecting yourself. And it's very difficult sometimes for people to respect themselves because they have been so beaten in life, beaten down, shall we say. How do you work with people who have been bruised, shall we say, or battered emotionally?
The breathing exercises go a very long way. For a time, I worked for an organization called the Healthy DC Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a great organization. They offer alternative health services for women that are HIV positive.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these women were referred to us because they have had former addictions or had been in abusive relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And we do a little posture, a few movements, but just to the body up and prepare them for the breathing.
Mm-hmm.
Just sitting down and guiding someone through breath work is very amazing and very healing. Telling them how to breathe, taking them on a journey throughout their body, gives
mm-hmm.
them an opportunity to connect with some part of themselves that was not hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes when women experience pain physically and emotionally, they live that pain in their body all day.
Yes.
Every day, and are afraid to feel anything, but they're not afraid to breathe.
Right.
People take the breath very lightly because you don't have to think about it. The breath
right.
happens. It's something that happens. But when you slow the breath down and you take them through some simple breathing exercises, they can let go. And after they let go, they're ready to talk and they're ready to share.
Ah.
It's very moving work.
Mm-hmm.
In my naivety, when I first started teaching yoga, I decided that I wanted to teach yoga. Yogi Bhajan has a quote. He says, to master something, you have to teach.
Right.
But the more and more I involve myself with other people, I realize how much of a healer that I've become just by sharing my personal experiences and making simple suggestions, and I try to be very compassionate with my class. You have a lot of people, I teach multi-level yoga in all
right.
of my classes. You have a lot of people that they teach level one, level two, level three, and it doesn't matter what level of ability the student is at. This is the class format they teach, and that's it. I don't
mm-hmm.
teach in that way. I provide modifications for everyone that are in the class. Because
mm-hmm.
even if someone is more advanced,
mm-hmm.
there's some foundational aspects that they need to work on.
Right.
And even if someone is a beginner, there's
mm-hmm.
some advanced poses that they are capable of doing. Because our anatomy is different. Everybody comes with their own experience and their own level of ability, and they just need to explore it and find
mm-hmm.
confidence in exploring that level of ability.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing so, you tend to notice a certain healing that takes place. I had a student that used to come to my class. She had a limited range of motion in her shoulders. She was slated for surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And after six, she came to the class. She couldn't raise her hand beyond her sixth rib, a little up the bottom of the rib cage.
Right.
After 6 months of coming to the class, she was raising her hands up in the air, touching her fingers above her head. Her doctor was like, whatever you're doing, keep doing it. And she was like, you know, I was really preparing myself to have surgery. I've had people that have had issues with their back.
Right.
And it just takes me right back to the Yoga Sutras where it talks about consistency in your practice,
mm-hmm.
eagerness, coming with the same level of intensity
mm-hmm.
each day.
Yes. That's kind of hard because there's some days when you do not feel intense. I don't care how good your intention is.
Well, there's some days that you may be a little tired.
Yes.
But if you intensity in terms of concentration,
mm-hmm.
that's where you get the consistency. Maybe
okay.
not intensity in terms of physical ability, but intensity in terms of concentration. I am here. I'm fully aware in the moment. That's
mm-hmm.
the true challenge of a yoga practice, because you could go to a aerobics class and be jumping up and down and
oh.
writing a grocery list at the same time.
You
go to a yoga class and try to hold a posture and write a grocery list, you're going to end up hurting yourself.
Right.
So
right.
That's the That's the, what I really mean in terms of intensity, focus,
okay,
concentrated effort.
Oh, I was going to say, because as I said, I try to do an hour of yoga. I do breath work and yoga before I even get out of bed in the morning. And it sounds like kind of cushy, and it is, but I'll tell you something. I feel so good when I get up. My body is awake, and I'm ready to hit the floor running. Even though I've, you know, just been relaxing and doing it lying down and the breath work, but I'm reluctant to start, but I feel so darn good when I'm done with it. I don't want to stop, you know?
Yes. Yes.
We don't have much more time left, I know, but I do want you to give out any messages that you want to the people that are listening, and where you teach if you'd like, or if you do private lessons or whatever, please give out that information now so that people know how to contact you if they desire to do so.
Yes, I'd like to share my email address. That is ptikin, P as in Paul, T as in Teresa, I, K-K-I-N as in nail at yahoo.com, ptikin at yahoo.com. I teach here in Washington, D.C. at Trinity University Center for Women and Girls in Sports. I also teach at the Yoga House Studio, which is located at 3634 Georgia Avenue Northwest. And I also teach at George Washington University Hospital. You can contact me via email if you want more scheduling information about my classes. But I'd just like to close with a brief meditation.
Well, it'll have to be a verbal one. We can't have dead silence on the radio.
Yes, it'll be a verbal one.
Okay. We haven't been given the signal yet, so I do want to say a couple words before we do close. And thank you for that lovely gift of closing with meditation.
It's coming close.
Okay. This is Phyllis Pricer. We're going to have, we hope, a guest next week who will be a dietitian and a personal trainer. We're going to try and provide as much different information as we can for people. And we're going to have some good hypnotherapists and some psychics down the road. I can say that if you have decided to take a class with Nikki, she is absolutely wonderful. We welcome you to come there. You can reach me at Psychic Worlds, email psychicworlds4@AOL.com, or you can call me at 202-387-2080, or you can reach me through bbsradio.com. We welcome your comments, and we look forward to talking to you again. All right, Nikki, if you can go with the meditation, please do so.
Yes, let's sit up straight and tall, rub the palms together.
Mm-hmm.
Touch the thumb to the chest.
Mm-hmm.
Inhale deeply, the belly expands. Exhale, the belly contracts. Inhale, the belly expands. Exhale, the belly contracts. With the eyes closed, visualize a white light in the center of the body, surrounding the heart, surrounding the entire body, surrounding the planet. Draw that white light to the sun, back to the planet, back to the body, back to the heart. Inhale deeply and exhale.
Thank you. Namaste. Thank
Namaste.
You so much. It's been a joy and pleasure, and I'll see you tomorrow morning, bright and early.
Yes, bright and early.
Thank you again.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
God bless, dear. Have a good evening, and to all of my listeners, thank you so much for listening with us. It's a joy always to bring you information and to talk and have fun on the radio. I can't tell you how much I enjoy being on the show and inviting people to come and talk. If there are any subject matters or anything else people would like to know or more questions, we're always here to help them out, and we're always here to be of service to others. Thank you very much. From Phyllis Pricer from Higher Dimensions.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.